Everybody has a mother, right? That's what Elizabeth Joy Rowe and Greg Anderson's mothers told them, and it's one of the reasons they were inspired to make a musical tribute to their mothers and kind of just the whole aspect of motherhood. It's a recording called Mother, and you'll hear more about it next on this edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. Well, Greg and Elizabeth, I have to tell you, I'm really excited about your new recording. One reason is because I am a mother.
Congratulations, and thank you for your hard work.
Well, I mean, seriously, though, reading how important your mothers have been in your life and your tribute to a variety of different types of moms on your new recording, I think that's it's really beautiful. So tell me a little bit about your moms and how they inspired you maybe to make this recording. I know it's dedicated to them.
We felt like our lives in music over the past decades have been, in a sense, a tribute to our mothers and the sacrifices that they made in our lives, the support they've given us, and the unconditional love as we've embarked on this lifelong journey. And in a sense, this recording is a manifestation of our gratitude and also our admiration for the theme of mothers, you know, motherhood. What does that entail? And we found a lot of sympathy, a synchronicity with this idea of creation. Motherhood might be perhaps the ultimate form of creation, but as artists, we are giving birth to new pieces, to performances, to new ideas all the time. And so it felt like a fitting sort of theme and tribute to the wonderful maternal figures in our lives.
So how has this idea of motherhood, and as you put it, perhaps the prototype of creation, driven you to tap into your full creative potential as arrangers and interpreters?
Oh, goodness. Well, initially, this kind of got underway when we performed on Mother's Day at the Gilmore Festival a couple of years ago, and we wanted to pay tribute to our mothers who were attending that concert, and we looked for a repertoire that might kind of hone in on this idea of mothers. And we realized that once we started finding items, we saw just the huge variety of ways mothers have been portrayed in music over the years. And that really got us excited and got us thinking about what it means to represent motherhood through music, and how does one, I don't know, communicate either the complete intense sense of warmth one often gets when they think of their childhood mother experiences.
And also, we like to tap into the diverse aspects of women or of people that serve as mothers. You know, mothers aren't merely beatific beings who emit tenderness, but they can also be saucy women or saucy figures like Mrs. Robinson. So we took that classic Simon and Garfunkel tune and, you know, lovingly added it to the mix, because sometimes mothers are only seen in one way. And for us as interpreters, arrangers, and performers, we always try to tap into the variety of life and the diversity of the human experience. And so we feel like this album has a great deal of just different moods and styles and states of being.
Yeah, when I think of my own mother, I think of just having so many different thoughts about who she is. I mean, we talk about motherhood being something of a complex state. I'm obviously not a mother, but when I think about my mother, I just, you know, there's times like in Bohemian Rhapsody when the singer just sings, "Mama." It really wants that, like, that closeness one might get with their mother. I certainly have many instances in my life where it's just like, I want that, that all over again. And then there's other times where we think of, you know, as Liz was saying, kind of that beatific, she's saintly, she's perfect, like, she you know, couldn't do anything wrong. She's your mother. How could she? And then there's the other times when you just are so mad because she wouldn't let you do what you wanted. But all of these emotions, like, you know, certainly as we were putting the album together, you know, just kept coming up in us, and we kept remembering our own histories and pasts with our mothers. And it was, for the most part, actually a really wonderful and inspiring challenge for us.
Now, what do your moms think of this recording?
Oh, I think they're so moved. I know my mom, she was incredibly touched by the recital that we gave at the Gilmore Festival. And in a sense, I want to give a shout out to her because she did inquire about the possibility of us committing those pieces to record. And she put it quite simply. She was like, you know, most everyone has a mom. How'd we come into this world, right? And so, she... From a personal place, I just want to acknowledge how incredibly inspirational she has been to me, not only because she has been the most extraordinary mother, but also because she has so many artistic sensibilities. She's a visual artist, but she's also very musical. And so, in fact, a lot of the music on the album, I feel like I've learned through her. Simon Garfunkel is like one of the artists that I grew up listening to. And then also The Lullaby by Brahms is a song that both Greg and I grew up listening to. Probably it may have been the first piece that we've heard in our lives. I owe it to her that my life has been surrounded by music, and it feels like the most organic thing to pursue.
It was interesting because when you bring up The Lullaby by Brahms, I was thinking, you know, if you created your own playlist from this recording, you could create even a little lullaby version, because there are several on here that are really like lullabies and make me think, anyway, of something I would have put on when my kids were really small and I was trying to get them to just calm down.
But then, of course, we have Let It Be on there. Just full avant-garde gospel dueling pianists going to town, and that might wake the children up. So, yeah, we have to.
I have to say about Let It Be that I always thought it was just about the Virgin Mary, and I had no idea that Paul McCartney was paying tribute to his own mother who died when he was 14.
Absolutely. We actually willfully juxtaposed Ave Maria, which has long been associated with the Virgin Mary, and then Let It Be, where he invokes Mary, and it does have this religious overtone. But at the same time, his own mother passed away when he was a young boy, and I think there is that sense of bittersweet yearning for her wisdom and her presence and how he feels it, especially in times of darkness and confusion, that he calls upon his mother. And I think that that's an emotion that all of us experience, and it might not be a mother per se, but we're always yearning for some sort of direction and a source of truth, and that is what we were trying to evoke in our arrangement of the work. There's this, as Greg said, this wild gospel dueling piano sensibility. Part of it, it's this, I would say, ecstatic search for union and for understanding. And, the two of us personally, you know, we have found that through the guidance of our mothers.
So in that piece, we have a son longing for his mother who's passed away. And then we have the other expression of that in a mother's grief mm-hmm. in the Grieg song where they're mourning the loss of their only daughter.
So intense. Grieg wrote that not long after his own daughter had passed away, but it's so touching that he wrote this song for his wife to sing because he just saw so much pain and struggle in her and was touched by it. But I can just not imagine as the mother to whom this song is dedicated being able to sing that song. It's just so full of grief. And I can't imagine it was anything but, like, intensely immediate for her emotionally to...
Yeah, to process. Yeah. In a sense, we're representing all of these different aspects of the maternal experience. And, kind of to combat that maybe Hallmark idea when you kind of create mothers as this one-dimensional being. But, you know, mothers, they suffer so much, sometimes quietly, you know, because they don't want to affect the people around them. But they also can experience incredible joy or desire or a search for self-expression. And that's why we chose the pieces we chose. Actually, there's the Rachmaninoff suite for two pianos, his first one called Fantasy Tableau, and that's not overtly about mothers, but our mothers love that piece. And so we wanted to make sure that they had one of their favorite pieces represented on the album.
So what do they love about it? Why did? Because they both chose it, right?
Yeah, they did. They did. It's a piece that's hard not to love. And honestly, I think one of the reasons my mom loves it so much is she, when she watches us play it, I think she recognizes how much we also love playing it. And she loves seeing the intensity and the just the fullness of ourselves that we put into the piece when we play it. And it's a weirdly narcissistic way to like actually refer back on that, but it is something I recognize when I talk to her about that piece. But in general, I mean, it's a piece that's hard not to love with its just romantic sensibility, its sweeping architecture and sweeping melodies, and just gorgeous. Heartfelt harmonies, and of course that Rachmaninoffian piano texture that's been doubled with two pianos there at play.
Well, I can tell you as a parent of a performer, there is no greater joy for your moms than to be able to watch you perform on stage and to know that you're loving every moment of it, really, honest.
Aww.
And all the time that they invested in you. Oh, I was reading your blogs, and I'm just like weeping reading the story of Elizabeth about, you know, you get to this competition, which you won without your dress, and your mom has to go back from Chicago to Milwaukee. I was like, holy smokes.
I swear, and
yes,
she's a
I have
saint.
Done things just like that.
I know. It's like she didn't even yell at me or get upset. She was like, I'm going right back. It just happened immediately. And, you know, it's like that's one of those indelible tales. It's just one of innumerable instances where she saved the day and where it didn't even almost cause a dent in her mood. And I think that's something that, you know, that I yearn to experience, like that sort of absolutely selfless, unconditional kind of love that I hear is what happens when you have children. And it's just, yeah, she's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Greg, you pay tribute to your grandmothers in What a Wonderful World. Tell me a little bit about your grandmothers and how they made your world so wonderful.
I think that they're super wonderful. They both passed away within a week of each other. And that's why it was just a week after that happened that we decided to write that arrangement and in honor of both of them. They grew up in northern Minnesota, and I would go visit both of them in this small town. And one of them had the Red Barn. It was like a full-blown farm, and then the other had a turkey farm and some cows. And it's just, when I think of both of them, I think of just, for me, you know, living in the city now, it's like I think of this calmer, simpler life that I kind of long for, and certainly nature. Oddly enough, I'm a vegetarian now, and I think, unbeknownst to them, it's something partly to do with them, just being there, seeing their love of the land, and their love, obviously, for these animals that they were raising. It certainly affected me as an innocent child, and now here I am.
So you open this recording with Dvorak's Songs My Mother Taught Me. Why was that the right piece to start this project?
I mean, when you just think about the title, in a sense, these are songs our mothers taught us, whether literally or figuratively. In a sense, our lives are almost like this record of the lessons that we've learned through our mothers and from our mothers. And, you know, Dvorak just beautifully captures this sense of poignancy and bittersweet,
wistful
tenderness. Yeah, there's
nostalgic.
Kind of like, yeah, there's like memories almost that he's evoking through the music. And we wanted the album to feel like it was this journey into the experience, both of mothers, but also of the progeny. You know, like what sort of memories do we remember of our mothers, and what do we want to celebrate and share about the complexity and the beauty and the exquisite generosity of mothers. And that piece is just also beautiful. My mom loves that piece. So,
oh.
Yeah. So I think she's pleased that it's the opener.
Now, I have to admit, I was surprised to see Bohemian Rhapsody on this recording. And you make sense out of it, and you also make it very operatic, which Freddie Mercury was certainly known for, that kind of stage presence. And you also include a little influence of Mozart and Wagner in there. Where do we hear that?
Well, so the album from which Bohemian Rhapsody comes is titled A Night at the Opera, and the song already has this kind of narrative, this architecture that feels operatic. And so we asked each other, well, what operatic sources might we reference that fits with this music? And so the first third of the piece, we just heard Wagner, and so we took it further and really incorporated some of those Wagnerian harmonic transitions. And that sense of just being harmonically lost was kind of a priority for us. Just as the music starts to swirl and intensify, we just used Wagner to take it further. Thank you. And then suddenly that scherzandi section in the middle. It feels like opera buffa, like a comedic opera, classical opera. And so we thought of Mozart, and actually specifically there's we're almost referencing a scherzo from one of the Beethoven piano sonatas, just to give it that classical lightness that obviously will very dramatically contrast with the Wagnerian excitement. And then at the end, we just went full, fabulous, over-the-top Freddie Mercury with the cascading octaves, made it feel like we were just ending like on a Liszt-ian opera paraphrase note.
Well, your arrangements are very clever, like Mrs. Robinson, how you also included a little quote from the Torch song, "I Put a Spell on You."
That's right.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, we are trying to underscore the erotic associations of mothers, you know. I mean, obviously we came into this world a certain way, so but in any sense, Mrs. Robinson, she's one of those iconic, you know, Anne Bancroft in Mike Nichols's movie The Graduate. She basically turns the whole idea of mothers on its head, because she is the seducer, she's the somehow like less pure, almost devious. And she really takes ownership over her desires, and she's a temptress. And so in order to highlight that, we're like, let's take this, you know, this song that really evokes sensuality. And Nina Simone, you know, I mean, that's just glorious, glorious rendition. We decided to fuse that with Mrs. Robinson. That's partly, it's sort of like put over a samba beat, so it has this really sensuous, like almost like chilled out feeling. So it's a totally different version. If you're expecting to hear Simon and Garfunkel's kind of rendition, you're going to be really surprised.
Yeah, I mean, you can always go listen to their rendition, but we are offering something almost completely new.
And there's a special bonus track, which is the humming chorus that comes from Puccini's Madame Butterfly, and you have a vocal a cappella ensemble joining you for this piece.
Them several years ago at a speaker conference, the Entertainment Gathering, EG, and became wonderful friends with them and kind of fantasized about the idea of sometime performing together. But it was just, you know, at what point do people need six male voices and two pianos? It didn't seem like a combination we'd ever really be able to materialize. But then as we were putting the album together, I brought up Madame Butterfly and how much I loved the humming chorus, and we suddenly, an idea germinated and blossomed, and we went to them and crafted an arrangement of the work together with them. So one of the pianos we prepared entirely by muting it, and that gives that piano almost a plucked quality. And then the other piano is not muted and serves more as like a kind of a jazz piano background. they're famous for some of their really complex jazz arrangements, but they really liked the idea, which we did too, of having them start out just perfectly in unison. As is traditionally done when performing that song, but then they slowly start to kind of fan out from there, getting more and more complex and more juicy in their jazz kind of stylings.
For all the music nerds out there, we are incorporating various quotes from butterfly-related pieces. So just putting that out there.
Yeah, there's some Grieg and Schumann in there.
Your arrangements are unique for you as a duo. What is the first thing you think about when you go to create an arrangement for you to perform together?
It's a really important question for us and one that we take very seriously. The first thing we do when we talk about creating an arrangement is ask ourselves, why is this essential, or how can we make it feel essential? What we do not want to ever do is just reduce a piece to a simplified piano version that would make the audience listen and say, that was nice, I wish I got to hear the real thing. What we want to do is bring something new to the table that sounds as if it only could be performed on two pianos, or as if it had originally been conceived as a piece for four hands at a single piano. And so what we usually do to guide us is look at the original piece, talk about it quite a bit, and dissect it and decide what aspects of the original we want to bring to the foreground. What element, what spirit is latent in the piece that we could take and go further with? That's the first thing that happens. We decide that's what we want to hone in on. And then from there, we actually start writing. But it's knowing the spirit from the start that is essential to creating something new.
Now, you've created a number of videos, which is one way that you're getting out there and I would imagine gaining a new audience. You have three new music videos for this album. Let It Be is one of them, The Humming Chorus, and the other is the Rachmaninoff The Night. Is there one in particular that maybe is gaining a little more traction than the others? And if so, why?
Wow, that's a good question. I
don't know the data yet.
Yeah, we don't know the stats quite yet because they're quite new. I think what's been such a joy over the past decade, that's pretty much how long we've been making these music videos, is to see people respond with such personal investment to different videos. Oftentimes at our concerts after the show, they'll be like, oh, I really love your Vivaldi video. It's so beautiful. And then someone else will be like, oh, the one that's in the Steinway Factory where the piano eats you alive. That's terrifying and incredible. And then someone else will be like, oh, yeah, The Rite of Spring where you totally torch and drown a piano at the end. You know, that's my favorite. And we love the subjectivity of music, and we also love that classical music provides this enormous palette for visual inspiration. And that has been the source of so much of our excitement and passion throughout the past decade, to find ways to share this music in a new way and to hopefully engage a new audience. And it's so wonderful when we see young people in the audience or people who are classical music, quote-unquote, neophytes. And they came to our shows because they saw our videos and they became energized by how we represent the music through that medium. And so it's just been lovely. And we don't feel like we have just one aesthetic if anything, maybe diversity is the name of the game for not only our music videos, but our programming, what we record, and what we love.
Well, and yeah, in the case of the Rachmaninoff video, The Night, The Love, the piece is so romantic and so sensual. We actually have a cocktail that we crafted to pair with it just to further amplify this aesthetic experience. So you're just kind of being bombarded by the beauty of Rachmaninoff's music, and then this visual of us performing surrounded by thousands of small fairy lights, and then the taste of this cocktail. It's called the Rachmaninoff Heartbreak, and it features Pinot Noir at the core of this drink, because that's the heartbreak grape. And all together, our hope is that you just melt in the deliciousness of this visual, auditory, taste stimuli.
Is there any other thing that's coming up in the next 6 months or so, or to next year, that you're like really excited about and you can give us like a little heads up about?
Yes, we actually have a brand new endeavor that we're super excited about. It is our inaugural competition. It's called the New Music, New Video Composition Competition. And it is for composers of any age, wherever they live, to compose a work of 5 minutes or less for piano duo, or they can be two pianos or four hands at a single piano. And then we will choose one to be refashioned into a music video, and we'll work with the composer to create something that represents the music in our signature Anderson and Rowe wild over-the-top style.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to this ultimate collaboration, because the two of us have so much fun together making these music videos and kind of thinking about like the wildness that we could find visually. And so we're excited to bring somebody new into the fold and work on that together. We also have we're doing a residency with the Liverpool Philharmonic, the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic, in September and October. And so we're playing several concertos with them, including a premiere of a new piece that we're writing, as well as we're doing a couple cocktail concerts where we mix together pieces of music with cocktails that we've created. And then a recital, I believe we're playing the Bartok Sonata for two pianos and percussion, as well as a couple other hefty staples from the piano duo literature. And so that just, I'm really excited for that couple weeks of like exploring all different sides of what we do performatively.
Oh, wonderful. And when did you say the competition gets underway?
The competition is currently open, and the deadline for submissions is September 1st. So composers, get to work. Yeah.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher.